Hello, Florida Bar members and Florida registered paralegals. This is a quick reminder from the Standing Committee on Mental Health and Wellness of Florida Lawyers that you are approved to use the Florida Lawyers Helpline, a completely free and confidential around-the-clock helpline designed to support you in managing the challenges of both your personal and professional life. By dialing 833-FL1-WELL or 833-351-9355, you can connect with mental health professionals who are ready to assist you. Take advantage of up to 5 complimentary in-person or telehealth counseling sessions annually, and remember, there's no limit to the number of calls you can make. Reach out today.
You're listening to the Florida Bar Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel. Produced by the broadcast professionals of the Florida Bar.
Welcome to the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. We are so glad you are joining us. This is Jamie Moore. I'm a practice management advisor at the Florida Bar and one of the hosts of the show, which is being recorded from our studio in Tallahassee, Florida. Our goal at the Practice Resource Center is to assist Florida attorneys with running the business side of their law practices. We focus on a different topic each month and carry the theme through our website with related tips, videos, and articles. Not every client interaction or legal matter goes as expected. Billing disagreements, unmet expectations, and misunderstandings can quickly escalate, leaving attorneys vulnerable to disciplinary action. Fortunately, mediation provides an alternative, a confidential, informal approach to resolving disputes before they escalate. Through the Florida Bar's free mediation program, attorneys and clients can engage with a neutral mediator to find common ground, saving time, expense, and stress compared to formal proceedings. Today, we'll explore how this program helps attorneys navigate conflict, protect their practice, and reach resolutions that work for everyone involved. So joining us today to discuss the Florida Bar's mediation program is Chanel Schuyler and Christina McGee. Chanel Schuyler serves as the director of the Attorney Consumer Assistance Program, also known as ACAP, and intake department of the Florida Bar. She also supervises the bar's grievance mediation and fee arbitration program, the practice and professionalism enhancement programs, and diversion discipline consultation services. Chanel is a graduate of Florida State University, cum laude, with a BS in finance and Stetson University College of Law. She began working for the Florida Bar as a senior attorney in 2007. She became director of the ACAP Intake Department in February 2012. Chanel is an active member of the National Organization of Bar Counsel, where she frequently speaks on topics pertinent to lawyer regulation. Christina McGee received her JD from the NYU School of Law and is a Florida Supreme Court certified circuit civil, appellate, and county mediator. She is a qualified arbitrator and is on the arbitration and mediation panel for the commercial and employment matters. Ms. McGee founded Brevard Mediation Services in 2011 and restricts her practice to mediation, arbitration, and other forms of dispute resolution. She is on the roster of mediators for the U.S. District Court for the Middle and Southern Districts of Florida. She is also a member of the American College of Civil Trial Mediators and a diplomat of the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. She currently serves on the Florida Bar's Grievance Mediation and Fee Arbitration Committee. Welcome to the show, Chanel and Christina.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Jamie.
Christina, I want to start with you. So before we dive into all the details of the Florida Bar's mediation program, can you explain what a mediator is and what their role entails?
Sure. In essence, what a mediator does is performs a facilitation role between two sides or more sides of a dispute, where the mediator attempts to get the parties to understand the risks and the rewards of continuing down a path towards litigation and jury trial and verdicts, and compare that with a more tailored approach that the parties get to have a big say in terms of deciding what outcome they want and how they want that outcome to work. So by engaging in mediation, the parties give up all of the vagaries that go along with the jury trial system or with appearing in front of a court to adjudicate a matter, and they take back some of that power onto themselves to decide how they want this dispute to end. And when they compare that, those two scenarios, most times participants agree that it makes more sense to go the mediation route. And they're more satisfied with the result. Or let me put it this way. Everybody is equally dissatisfied with the result. So no one clear winner and one clear loser.
Christina, I have always heard that that is the sign of a wonderful mediation where everyone goes away dissatisfied because somebody gave too much and somebody got too little, right?
Yes, exactly. But, you know, that is, one of the things that we tell disputants in a mediation all the time is even if you can't reach a resolution that you think should have been achieved through this process, if you walk out the door after this conference is concluded and you know with a perfect understanding, the most that the other side can do to bring this matter to an end, short of going in front of a judge or a jury, you have accomplished an awful lot. And so we try to hold that out as a goal as well, because most times, even if the parties can't shake hands at the end of this and say, yep, we got a deal, surprisingly, you know, a couple weeks later, I'll get a call saying, guess what? We got a deal. So, you know, those are important hallmarks of the process.
That's excellent. And Chanel, could you start by telling us when the mediation program was first initiated and why it was developed?
Yes, the Supreme Court basically has longstanding case precedent that says that fee disputes between a lawyer and their former client are generally not disciplinable offenses. Now, obviously, there are cases where attorneys have been disciplined for fee issues, such as when a fee is clearly excessive or extortionate or illegal by one of our rules. But generally speaking, that doesn't happen. I mean, that's very, very rare case where the court will actually take on a fee issue. So the court recognized, obviously, that there's still this big gap. They understood that most of our complaints have some sort of an element of a fee dispute in them. And so, you know, once the Florida bar looks at a grievance that's filed against an attorney and doesn't find that there is a rule violation that would warrant the imposition of discipline, but then we still have this fee issue out there. And so that's where the court came in and in 1989 built this program, a circuit mediation program. So there were 20 circuits throughout the state of Florida, and each one had their own mediation committee. And so, as you can imagine, you know, with 20 different circuits, there were probably 20 different types of ways that these kinds of things were handled. So in addition to that, there was also another program, the fee arbitration program. And so they were running sort of parallel, but divergent with one another. And so in 2004, the court said, why don't we centralize all of this into one program? And that's what they did. So we've in 2004, the Supreme Court amended its rules and created the grievance mediation and fee arbitration program.
That's great. And I think so many members are just completely unaware of this program. It sounds fantastic.
It really is. It's promulgated by Chapter 14 of the rules regulating the Florida Bar. So there's the main rules in Chapter 14, and then each of the programs, mediation and arbitration, have their own either procedural rules or arbitration provisions. And so it's all set out there in Chapter 14.
Okay, very good. So why might bar counsel or the grievance committee or even the Board of Governors refer a case to mediation? Like, is there a common theme, or how could you explain that?
Right. So there are many, many reasons why a case could be referred to mediation. The guidelines for a referral are actually set forth in the grievance mediation policies. They're not exclusive. They're not inclusive of nothing else that can go there. It's really just a broad kind of category. When the interest of the public is served, obviously, by the resolution of a disagreement between a former client and an attorney, when there's not a rule violation that needs to be further investigated. I think I mentioned a moment ago that, you know, most of our grievances have some sort of a an element of a fee dispute in them, in addition to other things. I always kind of say, you know, I've never seen a complaint that says my attorney did everything right. They just charged me too much money. There's always, they didn't talk to me. They didn't file something. They didn't talk to a witness. They messed up somehow, you know, and I want my money back, right? So, you know, when we look at it at a grievance, we're looking to see if there's a rule violation that we need to pursue. If we don't have that, then we still have that underlying fee dispute there. And that's when, you know, something is good for the program. A couple of the type of cases that routinely get referred to mediation, or at least there's an option for the complainant to, or either party to ask for mediation is maybe a refusal of the lawyer to return a client file. Generally speaking, a client file can be something that an attorney has a lien against for unpaid fees. So that would be resolved in a mediation, or could be resolved in a mediation. Another one is maybe a refusal to release that lien, or a lien on the recovery that the attorney has in their trust account for that particular client. Perhaps even a refusal to finish up a case or withdraw after a client has discharged the attorney. And also a failure of the lawyer to comply with a letter of protection from a service provider. So there's a number of different things that are reasons why a file could be referred to mediation. Those are sort of like major issues with what we see in bar complaints. There's also cases where we do move forward with a grievance, and we're looking to see if this attorney has violated the rules. And so as part of a discipline, or maybe even a diversion, a file may be referred to mediation in those cases.
Yes, and I was just going to say, Chanel, that I've done a number of those where the offer to the attorney involved is, you know, we're going to move forward with this, but if you walk down the mediation road and you participate in good faith, you know, we will be able to put this entire matter away, and it'll be taken care of through the, it'll be under the confidentiality that pertains to the mediation. So you won't have to be concerned about anything going public, with respect to what this client, alleged against you. And that can be a very attractive incentive.
Absolutely. So if you have a case and it has maybe several rule violations, those are, I guess you could say, top priority first. Those are figured out at the beginning. And then perhaps if there is some sort of fee issue, that can come after. Is that usually how it's?
That's accurate. Okay. Yes, yes. So okay. If there are rule violations that we're moving forward with, of course, that will be resolved first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the court can require an attorney at least to participate in mediation. Mm-hmm. Mediation is always voluntary, obviously, for the former client. There are certain circumstances and times when the court has actually said, as a part of the conditions of the discipline, or even in a diversion, that the attorney would have to participate or sign up to participate in the mediation. Okay. Now, whether that is acceptable to the client or not, that's up to them.
Okay. That makes sense. So on average, how long does the mediation process take? And I know this could vary widely, but just an average case, what is the typical time limit for that?
Right. Once we get both sides must agree on participating in our program. And the program is a free service offered by the Florida Bar. We do not charge anything for that service. Our mediators are volunteers throughout the state. The volunteers are highly experienced, and they agree as a service to the Florida Bar, to its members and to the public, to do this on a voluntary basis. So once both sides agree to participate in our program, and then a mediator is located that, number one, has the immediate time, you know, to handle the case, as well as there's no conflicts in the matter or in with either of the parties. And I'm sure that Christina can talk to you about some conflicts checks and things like that later. But once everyone has agreed to participate and a mediator is found, usually the mediation conference is held within about 45 days.
Okay. So there is like a certain time limit. Okay. Have you had a case where it's just, it's extended past that, or is that pretty much a hard cutoff as far as time?
It's not a hard cutoff. We don't lose jurisdiction with the parties or anything like that. We do try to handle those very quickly because, you know, that's part of the draw of the program. Number one, it's confidential, as mm-hmm. Christina mentioned before. And number two, then it's a much more rapid resolution to the matter, at least the attempt at a resolution in the matter. And so, yes, there are times when scheduling will interfere with, you know, depending upon mm-hmm. whether there's, you know, at least three people involved, and there could be up to five with just the parties if both sides have their own attorneys, which mm-hmm. everyone is permitted to have their own attorney present as well. And a great majority are pro se former client against their former attorney. So there's not a requirement to have an attorney. But when you're talking about scheduling several people, you know, on a particular time frame, it does generally take a little bit of scheduling to get that going, right?
Okay, very good.
Yeah, scheduling can be a challenge, but Chanel's right. We try real hard to get it done within about that 45-day period from the time that the ACAP office hands it out and says, you know, let's get going. They're ready to mediate, only because the longer it drags on, the harder it can be. Sometimes people's positions solidify, but if we can get to them quick, you know, many times they haven't had as much rumination time or other things. Because Chanel's right. I've never done one of these either where the client said, you know, my lawyer did a couple things wrong, and I'm really upset about it, but I don't want any money back because I think everything that my lawyer charged me was appropriate. Or the converse of that, which is, you know, I think that my lawyer did something wrong, and by the way, I want back all of the fees that my lawyer required from me as mm-hmm. as part of the representation. So sometimes it's better to get in there quicker and help the both sides of the dispute, just get this sorted out. It makes everybody's lives more bearable if we can get it done and move on.
Definitely. Yeah, I could see the benefits to that for sure. So are mediators and the parties involved required to meet in person, or are there virtual meetings, you know, such as Zoom? Is that allowed in the process?
It is allowed now. Prior to the pandemic, you know, when Zoom was not such a common occurrence for any kind of legal get-togethers, people didn't do this typically. At that point, I remember doing all of these in person. With this one exception, there was a client who had moved out of state. And so the client came in through Skype and was in the conference room of the law firm via Skype. And then, of course, the lawyer who was involved was physically present, and I was physically present. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to do. Of course, once virtual mediations, arbitrations, court proceedings all became very normalized for everyone, there is a lot to be said for the comfort level that participants experience when they're in their own turf and they don't feel like they have to come into a law firm necessarily. Lawyers are comfortable in law firms. But sometimes clients are not. And, you know, finding a place where the complaining client felt like they weren't being put at a disadvantage could be problematic, especially when you're trying to comply with requirements for confidentiality. So you have to be in a place where the rest of the world cannot see and cannot hear what you're doing. And so that could get a little tricky on occasion.
Yeah. And I would imagine too, having the virtual component makes scheduling easier as well, you know, as far as keeping within your timeline.
It does, Jamie. You know, when we had to have these in person, well, there were definitely benefits of having people in person. I think the overall theme was that, look, if you're going to take your time to sit down at a table and do this, you're committed mm-hmm. to trying really hard to resolve this, because you don't want to come back and you don't want to waste more time going to court or whatever. You know, that was the kind of the overarching theme there. You know, we would have to locate a mediator, you know, within the geographical area of both the client and the attorney. Generally speaking, we would look to where the attorney had their practice mm-hmm. and then find a mediator around there. Because generally speaking, that's where the client was as well. Mm-hmm. You tend to hire your attorney, you know, pretty close to home. But in this situation, we can have a mediator from Pensacola doing a mediation for someone from Key West and the other one from Jacksonville. So, when it's online, it's great.
Yeah. That sounds
great. And just along those lines, when we were all sort of home-based, there, even though everybody talks about confidentiality and mediation, there was some level of discomfort that, you know, I am also, you know, a full-time neutral, have been practicing law for a long time, and I'm coming in and I'm facilitating this conference, and that, you know, the lawyer in question would feel like, you know, somewhat embarrassing to have to go through this kind of process and have a client, you know, make these allegations about what the lawyer did or did not do. Whereas, as Chanel points out, if you have somebody who's completely outside your county and you're not really going to ever cross paths with unless you work together on some joint project for the Florida Bar, it can give you a greater sense of security in the confidentiality.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, really. I mean, some towns are so small that it's, you know, could be 2 degrees of separation and, you know, everyone in that town. So I think that's a great point. So Christina, you mentioned this at the beginning of our program here, and I might get this incorrect, but you said successful mediation, you know, it's successful if the parties walk away and they're both unhappy. And I probably said that incorrect, but this kind of goes with my next question. What happens if an agreement isn't reached during the mediation? And what are the next steps?
Well, if we don't get to a resolution, then, you know, we do sort of turn it back over to ACAP or to the court if the court's made the referral. And then the parties need to pursue whatever other judicial avenues are available to them. That's why there's such a strong preference for trying to help the parties reach a resolution, because we know, all the mediators in the program understand very clearly what the psychic and the emotional and the distraction costs are for a practicing attorney to have this continue to loom and hang over their head. You know, by the same token, if the client wants to move on and seek new counsel or has sought new counsel, it's just far more helpful to them in terms of, you know, what was the underlying case about in the first instance, instead of having to concentrate on that. Plus, now I've got this claim against my former lawyer and I have to concentrate on that as well. You know, it can create a lot more division of a party's resources on all kinds of levels. And so that's why the emphasis is to try to get it done. But the short answer is that if an agreement isn't reached, it goes back to where it was. And then those outcomes that are out there, either to litigate the matter or to continue with whatever discipline is being imposed by the bar or the Supreme Court, actually, that is what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Jess, generally the parties are left in basically the same position as when they walked in the door. Mm-hmm. If they don't settle, then they're just kind of left. We do have now, though, a what we're calling a pilot program. We're testing out, and it's been quite successful because the mediation program is also now coexistent with the arbitration program here at the Florida Bar. If the parties actually choose arbitration, there is a mediator also assigned to that. And Christina was actually very instrumental in bringing this pilot program to life because she had seen the fact that a number of the arbitrations that were assigned, the parties would say, well, can't you just mediate this for us? And at that point in time, like, no, you can't. You know, an arbitrator is a neutral that is more like a judge versus a neutral that will help and facilitate the communication between the parties towards settlement. We did develop this pilot program, and whereby it parties to an arbitration can actually elect to go to mediation first. And we will assign a mediator to every arbitration file. We assign a mediator as well. and the parties elect to go through that mediation process. It doesn't slow down the process. You know, everything is kind of still scheduled for the arbitration. However, before the arbitration happens, the parties go to this mediation and see if they can work it out with a neutral. We've had a great amount of success with this program. Well over half of the files that are scheduled for arbitrations are actually settling in the mediation process.
That's excellent. That's great. We touched on, you know, the clause a little bit earlier, but do they need to have that clause? Is it required in order to participate in the program, the mediation clause? Or can they just, you know, if they've had an issue but they don't have the clause, can they still call ACAP and get assistance?
Anyone can go through this program. So if it's a Florida lawyer and a past client that, you know, has an issue, most certainly. There's not a mandatory clause for arbitration like there is, excuse me, for mediation like there is for arbitration.
Okay.
Arbitrations are because you're giving up a right to go to trial, lawyers have to make that big and bold and sparkly in their agreements, you know, to draw attention to that provision since, you know, that is a right that is being waived. That's not the case in mediations. Mediations are so much different, you know, and like Christina had described before, it's where the parties are coming together and there's a facilitation of communication towards that settlement. But there's not a requirement. No one's going to be making an arbitration, you know, against or for a particular party. The neutral is just really trying to bring the parties together in a mediation. And so in that respect, there's not a mandatory requirement of certain language in a fee agreement if you want to go to a mediation first.
Okay.
That's true, Jamie, because there's, you know, one of the hallmarks of mediation is that it should be non-coercive. If it is coercive, it is not a mediation. It's something else, but it certainly isn't a mediation in the state of Florida, the way the Florida Supreme Court has established mediation practice and procedure in this state. But nonetheless, you know, it's fairly simple just to incorporate into an arbitration clause in a fee agreement that the parties can select mediation as an alternative if counsel thinks that that is a good idea. Some people think that's a good idea and some people don't. They'd rather have that, you know, you have to go arbitrate and use that sort of as a leverage to avoid civil trial. And of course, as Chanel pointed out, because you're asking the client, the consumer, to waive an existing right, you need to make it very clear that that is what this clause does and to make sure that the client understands it perfectly before they agree to do that. Because mediation is a somewhat different animal, perhaps not, but you know, it's easily incorporated if you want to incorporate it in there. It doesn't have to be mandatory mediation. It can just be, you know, an alternative on the way. And as Chanel points out, if this pilot program really takes off and we stop calling it a pilot program, Chanel, and say, this is what we're doing, we're going to have everybody who goes into arbitration will have the option to select mediation as a first stop after they've got their arbitration date set up and on the calendar so that they can make a choice about, well, maybe we can go this route to get it done. And that can be very helpful for the parties as well.
Very good. And Christina, have you found that certain practice areas work better with mediation or not so much?
You know, the kinds of things that clients complain about their lawyers doing, as Chanel has alluded to, I don't know if there's any particular substantive matter that sort of lends itself to client complaints more than the other matter. Perhaps in divorce proceedings tend to yield a lot of complaints, but that could just simply be, you know, the nature of where the parties are at that point in their particular existence. No, I haven't found that there's a particular arena where clients have a greater tendency to come and want to grieve their lawyers, either for fees or for any other substantive issue.
Okay, very good. I'd like to change gears here and talk about becoming a volunteer for the program. Can you tell our listeners who is eligible to become a mediator in the program and what is the approval process like?
Sure. I'll take a little bit of this and then Christina, jump right in if you feel like it. So the eligibility requirements are listed in the grievance mediation policies in Chapter 14. So we're looking for experience, obviously, in the approval process. So if there's Supreme Court certified mediators in good standing, the Dispute Resolution Center, retired judges or justices in the courts of the state of Florida, people who were program mediators before the merger of the program, or anyone who, in the opinion of the committee, possesses the requisite education, training, experience, or certification in alternative dispute resolution to be a program mediator. And so the process for becoming a volunteer in our program, which we always welcome, is basically filling out an application, attaching your resume, and giving, you know, sort of that list and summary of your experience. And that application then, along with the supporting documents, goes to our standing committee. And the standing committee votes on the approval of that person in our program.
And Chanel, there is a real push to seek non-lawyers as a part of that program as well. And so I think that's an important aspect also, so that, you know, I know you talked about this in the last recording that you did, Jamie, on the arbitration program, but the benefit of having non-lawyer neutrals available is that it can alleviate concerns on the consumer side that, you know, the deck is going to be stacked against them in some way, because if you have a lawyer mediator mediating a case involving attorney misconduct, it's like, yes, but you guys are part of a, you know, a brotherhood at the bar, right? Mm-hmm. And you can get mm-hmm. that kind of pushback sometimes. You may have to spend a little time allaying some of those concerns. And depending on the nature of the conflict, you know, for example, people who come out of, you know, there are a number of people in the banking industry who end up in our volunteer program who are just used to looking at financial statements and can figure out, you know, well, was this overcharged? Was this mischarged? Sometimes there's bad arithmetic. I know that sounds hard to believe because of all the software that's out there to help lawyers keep records straight and to keep things sorted out. But sometimes those kinds of things crop up, or it's just a matter of getting that explained clearly to someone. And sometimes folks who are in that kind of position can do it in a way that, you know, a lawyer wouldn't necessarily have the same direct experience with and expertise in order to be able to approach that topic from that perspective. So, you know, I think it's, you know, there is a real push by the committee to make sure that it's not just all lawyers all the time or all certified, Supreme Court certified mediators all the time, but that there is a real value to having people who bring different life experiences into this program. And who are able to, you know, explain things in a way to both lawyers and to consumers about how these positions seem and, you know, what some of the, you know, some of the missing information could be and how does that get filled in.
I like that. I wouldn't have even have thought about that, but I think that's such a great point. And what can you discuss, you know, just some of the primary benefits for mediators who, you know, volunteer to join the program? What, if you're a Florida Bar member, what are your benefits?
Well, thank you for asking that. We are able to provide 5 hours of CLE credit per reporting period because you're volunteering. We try not to ask you to do more than one or two of these mediations a year. So it is basically hour for hour kind of calculation for the CLE. The other benefit, I think, is that a real feeling of giving back to the bar. There are a lot of people who may have served on grievance committees prior to coming to our program. And, you know, they found that their service there on the grievance committee, they really enjoyed it. They enjoyed just the interaction. They wanted to continue that volunteerism with the Florida Bar. You know, another benefit, I think, is especially to members of the Florida Bar is they get to act as a neutral where they're not on the hot seat, mm-hmm. so to speak, and their bill is not being questioned or something like that. But they get an overall picture of what a client would be complaining about, mm-hmm. And you know, they get to kind of look from the outside in. And that's really a valuable kind of thing that they can take back then and say, well, you know, I see how people, you know, my clients may perceive this and change their own practice and profession to sort of ensure that, okay, well, I'm not going to fall for that, you know, issue that came up in a mediation that I mediated, you know, for someone. For instance, if there was a lack of communication issue, I never knew what was going on in my file, and then I get this bill. Well, you know, okay, so if you're looking at that case and you know, there's only two or three letters over the course of, you know, 2 years of representation, you're like, you know, my client needs to know what I'm doing on a routine basis. If I'm going to send out a bill every 30 days, I bet, you know, and it has, you know, I wrote two letters here and I had a phone conference there. Well, you're going to have to communicate that to your client a lot better. And so I think that's another benefit of being one of our volunteers, is that you really see from the outside looking in, like, okay, that's a great point. I'm not going to do that, or I'll do something else better to alleviate those concerns on the front.
And sometimes, Chanel, it's just those, you know, like basic stuff. So I remember doing one where the complaint was lack of communication. The client had been called every week by the paralegal to say, these are the things that are going on in the case, and this is what is coming up next week. And, you know, so there was a lot of communication from the lawyer's, quote, office. But the client said, I never heard from the attorney. Not once, not ever. I met the attorney the first day that I signed the retaining agreement, and I never, ever had any interaction with the attorney after that. And sometimes it's just a matter of making it clear, you know, from the lawyer's side, that when my office communicates with you, it's the same as if I'm communicating with you, because I'm accountable for what the office says and does. And it's just, you know, that little tweak would have made all the difference. And, you know, once we could get the client to think about it from that perspective, we got that case unlocked. But there's, you know, there are those kinds of things that are so fundamental to how lawyers operate that lawyers don't think about them. They just, it doesn't register that that would be an issue. Why would that be an issue? Every single week, somebody marked down time for communicating with this party, and yet there was still this complaint about no communication. That's just one example.
No, I think that's a fantastic point. And even if they put that right in their fee agreement, you know, right from the beginning, hey, this is how I'm going to communicate, then that would take care of that situation.
Yeah. And the opposite is true as well, because a lot of times a fee agreement, you know, will say, I'm going to bill you when I communicate with you. And then, right. So then the client may be, you know, calling or emailing repetitively, and there's really not a lot going on in the case or anything like that, but you're taking up a lawyer's time and you're discussing the case. So, I mean, it's a billable time. And so a lot of times, you know, to look at that as a whole, you know, a mediator is going to say, well, there was a lot of communication here. And there were also times when, you know, that attorney said, look, I'm billing you for this time. So, like, consolidate your questions. You know, we'll handle these, you know, all together maybe once a week, like Christina was saying in that other file, versus, you know, just, you know, emailing me at 2 a.m., you know, and just this, you know, and another thing, click, and another thing, enter, right. You know, kind of thing. So, yeah.
So, Chanel, you mentioned that bar members can earn up to 5 hours of CLE credits.
Yes.
What if they just really enjoy the program and they want to, you know, volunteer more? Is that permissible?
Okay. Most definitely. Okay. We will definitely take any volunteer time we can get.
Okay. And is there a minimum amount of time that you ask of folks? Is, you know, one session perhaps, or
one,
you know,
to two per year? And again, that's just you know, based on the requests that we get.
Okay.
But one thing that all the volunteers have to agree to do, they're going to get back the gratification of being in the program, but they also have to make a commitment to it. And, you know, trainings are out there that are required for all of the volunteer participants to go to. We try to keep those trainings updated every couple of years so they don't just get real stale, just so that everybody is refreshed on how the program works, what it is you're attempting to do, what are some of the typical snafus that come up during this program? What are ways to handle those particularized problems so that it's done in a way that's professional and appropriate and can still keep the parties on track towards a resolution and a mediation, or on the arbitration side towards coming to the end of the process so that an adjudication can be rendered by the arbitrator?
Christina, I'm so glad that you mentioned the training, because that was something that I did forget to mention earlier with who might be eligible to be a mediator. There is training for mediators as well as our arbitrators before they even take their first case. In addition to that, we do have a training requirement for every 5 years. They need to just train. And again, this is, you know, something where they may be a mediator for years and years and years, but we are focusing on, in particular, the mediation program under Chapter 14. So there are some, you know, little nuances and things like that. And so we want to always make sure that they know where to go, what questions to ask, and to make sure that they're just familiar with Chapter 14's provisions.
And I did find, I believe, one of the trainings on FloridaBar.org on the Grievance and Mediation Committee page. And I did watch it. And Christina, you were wonderful in that. So is that the training? Okay, perfect. And, you know, after someone goes through the training and if they have any questions, you know, is there support or is there like a designated person like, hey, you can call this person and they can, you know, answer any questions you have? Or what is that follow up like?
Yes, our contact information is on the website, and they can contact me. If I can't answer the question, like program administration wise, and if it's just a particular question, maybe for a mediator, I would call Christina or one of our other very fantastic mediators who are very experienced in the program.
Okay.
Yes. And you know, the other thing to point out, too, is that, you know, the standing committee has made some changes and updates to the rules that govern this. And so, you know, on both the arbitration side, I don't think there's been any changes on the mediation side for a long time, Chanel. But I know on the arbitration side, we keep tweaking things to make sure that as some of these issues arise in the proceedings that our volunteers are handling, that we have a process to address some of those substantive issues. And the arbitrators aren't sort of having to make it up in order to deal with a particular issue. I can tell you that sometimes people hit me with a doozy during a mediation and I pick up the phone and I call back and I go, hey, what do you guys think about this? And who can I call about this issue? Because I'm not sure I know the right answer to that question, but there's always somebody who has a good idea. And so that's very helpful. You're not out there swinging in the wind. Handling this stuff on your own is the point. If you get something that you're not sure about, people will come and get your back.
Yes. And we also tried to, you know, supply the mediator volunteers with necessary forms for setting the mediation conference, the form for reporting back to the Florida Bar that, you know, whether or not a settlement has been made in the matter. So we do try to handle those very openly and transparently with, you know, with our volunteers so that they feel supported.
That's great. Yeah. So it's like templates. And so they don't have to feel like they're creating something and all that. That's perfect. All right. And so to pull it all together, what impact do you hope the mediation program will have on the legal community and the way disciplinary cases are resolved?
I will start this and Christina can mop it up. But I think that it's such a valuable program because it is a free service. I think that's, you know, from the consumer perspective, if they have filed a grievance against an attorney or thinking about that, but they really want their money back, they certainly don't want to be in a position to, quote unquote, throw good money after bad kind of thing, not knowing if they're ever going to get a refund or whatever kind of thing. So this program is sort of that risk-free kind of thing. And, you know, it can be done very quickly in the scheme of things, timing wise, within about 45 days, plus or minus. And so it helps to resolve those issues that perhaps really shouldn't go through the grievance process. And I'm saying that very respectfully that, you know, we certainly look at every allegation that is made in a complaint. against an attorney, and we, you know, make a determination as to whether or not then there's a rule violation that we would need to move forward with any sort of prosecution of a discipline case. But in the cases, and again, most of them that have some sort of a fee dispute issue involved are you know, going to be closed out and then geared towards this program. And so I think that's the benefit and the main outcome of this, to help former clients and the attorneys to resolve these issues short of going to court, and in a very timely manner.
That's true. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's that idea that it can be very swift. It is cost effective. It's confidential. It gives you an avenue to find out if this matter can be taken care of without having to make that incredible investment of yourself and your resources, and in some cases having to go out and hire new counsel in order to help you go through this process. Those are all sort of incalculable in terms of the benefits. And Chanel, I just want you to mention the number of requests for assistance that you get on a yearly basis, and how many of those cases how many of those requests get turned into cases.
Yeah, that's an important kind of, you know, statistic to hear. So the Attorney Consumer Assistance Program does roughly about 15,000 requests for assistance every year. And we turn about maybe about half of those are something that comes in writing, where we're making a determination as to whether or not they should be turned into complaints and investigated. Out of the whole amount of 15,000, there's about 3,500 that are actually turned into case files, where we will require the response from the attorney. The complainant gets an opportunity to file a rebuttal. And then, you know, we take a look at that, and we're seeing whether or not there's a reason to move forward with an investigation and prosecution of a rule violation. You know, that is, you know, really the time then, you know, before that process, where we were looking at it at the outset saying, no, that's really not even a complaint that would warrant a response. Or then at the time when we've looked at and investigated the front end of the file, and we're seeing that there's really not a violation that we would pursue as, you know, for discipline. Then at those two occasions is when we're steering people towards either mediation or arbitration at their choice. They can choose either one. And like I said, if they do go ahead and choose the arbitration out of the box, basically, you know, their first decision, they will automatically now get an assignment of a mediator that's standing by for them. There is no prohibition if they just choose mediation that they can't go on next time to arbitration, or you know, if they don't settle in a mediation that where they've just at the outset chosen that field. The problem with that, though, is a lot of times, you know, someone has already taken time. Both parties and the mediator have taken time to, you know, schedule that mediation, and trying to go back and then ask them to voluntarily submit again to another proceeding at that juncture may be a little bit more difficult to sell. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're very thankful for this pilot program, because it really kind of, it guides people to that mediation first, and then they've always got that second layer already signed up for, you know, in the box. So it's a really good program.
Yeah. No, this sounds fantastic. And Christina, do you have any closing thoughts?
You know, we have talked about so many things that make this program worthwhile, from both the perspective of the consumer and the perspective of the lawyer who's either bringing the complaint or is the subject of the complaint. And it's just, it makes a tremendous difference, I think, in the life of a lawyer who gets grieved, because, you know, we all know, or we all have had that experience where you get that envelope from the Florida bar and it takes you 3 days to open it because you're petrified to see what's inside. But nonetheless,
but do open it and do respond to it.
Right. That's right. Yes, open the letter. Nothing. It is not the end of the world. You know, the bar should, you know, I have seen this ad somewhere, but I don't think the Florida bar does it anymore. And they may have only done it once. It says, in essence, just because you're grieved doesn't mean you're a bad lawyer. and, you know, there is help for you. And Chanel, I don't know if that was something that you all put together, that kind of marketing campaign when ACAP got up and running, but the idea that there is help and there are processes available to help make this more manageable for everybody involved, I think is a huge boon.
I couldn't agree more. And we say that in our department, the Practice Resource Center, we're here to help you. We want to help you. We want to, you know, provide you with whatever help we can. So I love that, Christina. Thank you. Well, it looks like we've reached the end of our program. Thank you so much, Chanel, Schuyler, and Christina McGee for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Chanel and Christina, if our listeners have questions, where can they learn more about the Florida Bar's mediation program?
If they go to our website, floridabar.org, and then they can look under the public tab and they'll find us there.
If you like what you heard today, please rate us in Apple Podcasts. Join us next time for another episode of the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. I'm Jamie Moore. Until next time, thank you for listening.
If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit legalfuel.com. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Florida Bar's podcast via iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, and RSS. Find the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, the Florida Bar. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.